Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and one of the new things in the New York City schools this fall is a doubling of the number of parent-teacher conferences from 2 per school year to 4 per school year. With our WNYC education site, schoolbook.org, we're doing a series on this program on parent-teacher contacts throughout the school year. Tonight is the first conference for elementary schools. Tomorrow, high schools, and Thursday, middle schools, the chance for parents and teachers to interact early this year. One of the changes that the new school's chancellor, Carmen Farina, put in place. She joins us now. And to get the teacher's perspective on how to get the most from these encounters, we're joined by Nick Lawrence, who teaches 8th grade social studies at the East Bronx Academy for the Future. Welcome, Chancellor Farina, and welcome, Mr. Lawrence.
Oh, my pleasure.
No, thank you.
Chancellor Farina, why did you go from 2 to 4? Why is this important?
Well, I think this is crucial so that parents understand from the very beginning of the year what's expected of their children. What does the curriculum look like? What are the teachers' expectations? What are the things that parents can do at home? This week is really more about an overview of what's going to happen during the school year, and it gives the parent an opportunity to ask questions and be involved and perhaps even figure out what kind of trips they might want to take with their families on weekends. As a teacher, I always used this opportunity to meet with parents, but because it wasn't officially part of the curriculum, I used to do it at my house because it was only half a block from the school, and I found that it just set the tone much nicer for the rest of the year for parents and I to work together.
And this is separate, if I'm correct, from the additional time in the new teacher's contract for parental engagement, which I think is supposed to happen for 40 minutes every Tuesday or something like that. So do you see these as part of a package of parental engagement improvement?
Yes, absolutely. I think the Tuesdays are going to be very different from school to school based on the needs, but this is going to be universal across the city, and many parents have already emailed me to tell me how great it is to be able to sit and meet their child's teacher for at least an hour and a half and get an idea of what's happening. When I go to schools now, there are posters in the building that say, you know, come ask the questions of what's going to happen. What's the homework policy, for example? How do I feel about long-term projects? This is an opportunity for teachers to set out their agenda and parents to ask the relevant questions. This is not about their specific child today. This is more about what the classroom teacher is doing. And in the high schools, when, for example, our 9th graders are a little frightened, it's an opportunity for the teachers to let parents know how they're going to be handling the new entries. The same thing in 6th grade. So one of the things I think is going to happen, middle school parents have traditionally not come into school in the same numbers. We're going to see larger numbers because the first meeting is going to be about expectations, curriculum, what's going to happen in each grade. And I think it takes away the fear that I'm only coming here to hear about my child. So I think it's going to be a much better place to start the school year.
So listeners, parents especially, add your advice or ask your questions about getting the most out of parent-teacher conferences. 212-433-WNYC. Are you already in touch with your child's teachers? What do you wish you had known before, if you've already gone through a number of years of having your kids in school, that you've learned as your child has advanced through the grades that you might be able to offer as a tip to other parents for using these conferences? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For the school's chancellor, Carmen Farina, who's with us for another few minutes, and also Nick Lawrence, who teaches 8th grade social studies at the East Bronx Academy for the Future. So, Nick Lawrence, what does your school have planned for tonight?
Well, our school is a 6-12 school, so we actually have the conferences tomorrow. But similar to what the chancellor was saying about expectations, we have talked with our grade-level team leaders about what the conferences should look like, certainly setting up expectations, saying what policies are to be in place for the year, trips that are coming up. For instance, our 8th grade goes to Washington, D.C. every year, so I'll be talking about that as the organizer of the trip and giving out contracts and that sort of thing. We also see it as a time to have real conversations with the adults that we're going to be working with and potentially their students as well, their kids. We think of it as a kind of a community-building opportunity. So in addition to those expectations, sitting down and having the ability to build trust and have conversations about their kids' that are not reactive. Again, as the chancellor was saying, we're not talking about grades. We're not talking about how to bring grades up or, you know, anything like that. We're just trying to start a conversation, a frank conversation with them at the beginning of the year before we have to then realign our thinking or remediate or anything like that.
Chancellor Farina, you know, critics of trying to fix all these kids' lives in the classroom often say the real issue with all these failing kids is getting their parents more involved with their homework. And you've talked about the importance of tonight institutionalizing the communicating of expectations to parents. How much do you think that's true, the way we tend to hear it? And how much is this expanded parent-teacher schedule about that?
More about the social emotional needs of kids. I'm not a big believer in children and parents sitting down and doing their kids' homework because then the teacher doesn't know the next day what the child understood or didn't understand. But I do think parents should know approximately how long homework should take, should be giving children a place in the home where they can do their homework, you know, quietly and productively. I think it's important, for example, for parents to know if they're going to have homework over the weekends, if they're going to have long-term projects. I know as a teacher, I always gave out a calendar when I did long-term projects, what should be done week one, week two. So I think it's an opportunity, you know, as Nick said, to let the parents know what your processes are going to be. But I'm not a big believer in parents assisting with homework as much as I am with them setting the correct conditions. I was in a school today where the principal said she has once a month, but these Tuesdays she's going to do what she calls homework and dinner, where she's going to actually have the teacher sit with the parents and say, you know, what does the homework look like? Why are they giving that kind of homework? And then they're all going to have dinner together. Mm. And I think that's what we want to see, that this is a productive. Parents are our partners, and how do we partner together?
Mike in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I taught in the system for 30 years, and I taught physical education. I don't see how more parent-teacher nights or afternoons are effective when we had two per year, hardly any parents show up. And usually the parents of better students show up. The kids who are really having problems, you never see their parents.
Nick Lawrence,
never.
Nick Lawrence, is that an issue for you at East Bronx Academy for the Future?
It certainly can be, but we do a pretty good job of reaching out to parents, especially we have pretty good attendance. I know in our eighth grade, I'm in the eighth grade team. Certainly by grade level, it fluctuates, and as they get older, the parents come in a little bit less. But, you know, we looked at our advisory list on Sunday, and I called all of the parents from my advisory, and, you know, I expect most of them to show up. I know that in certain settings that parents don't show up, and that certainly is a problem, but I think that, you know, I work in a difficult community where parents, there are many situations where parents have difficulty coming in because they work two or three jobs or what have you, but I think that there are ways to get, you know, a majority of parents in for
Chancellor,
a night like
to,
this.
To the caller's larger point, It varies. It's so disparate, school to school, and as he says, student to student, and it tends to be the ones with the most problems whose parents don't come. If you agree with that...
No, I don't.
You don't agree with that.
No, I'll be very honest with you. I don't think we've done as good a job as letting parents know that we're there to help them. And I think one of the things that we're stressing on this, if parents need translators, we're going to provide translators. We are asking... teachers do exactly what Nick said he does, make personal phone calls. We're getting parent coordinators involved. I was in a school today with 200 fathers showed up to take your child to school day. The principal said she was so overwhelmed she had expected 50. We have to look at the glass half full, not half empty. And I'm working on the premise that most parents want what's good for their kids, but it doesn't mean necessarily going to a meeting that's not going to help them with their child. We're putting this out there as this is a way to help your child. So we'll see what happens after today, but I am convinced that this is the way to go. And because we're going to have all these Tuesdays, I have had principals who said to me they already met with their PTAs, their SLTs. I was at a meeting last week where the SLTs are thinking about maybe serving dinner one day a month. There are ways to do this, and I refuse to accept the premise that parents are not going to show up And I think I have high expectation for parents the same way I expect teachers that have it for their kids.
Do you? Is it new this year that you'll be providing translators, or new that it'll come from the central DOE budget? Something new there?
This is something that we've asked principals to do. We met with all the superintendents, and we asked them wherever possible.
From their budgets?
Well, it's not so much their budgets. These are people who work in their schools already. Many of our parent coordinators speak other languages, but also parents can translate for each other. You know, I'm a non-English child, and I did translation for my parents, and today is like they can take their kids to school with them today. This is not an adult-only day. So there's lots of ways to make parents feel welcome. And like I said, I've seen signs all over the system, and principals are anxious to tell me what they're doing today. We'll start collecting some ideas and then putting them out in a handbook, you know, ideas on what to do with parents in your building. But I believe in parents, and I believe parents are going to show up, and I'm happy about it.
Chancellor Farina, one other question before you go. I know you've set yourself some big goals in your new job, including in the version that I saw, getting all kids reading at grade level by the end of second grade, which only 30% do now, if I'm seeing the right numbers. And obviously we're in year one of the new universal pre-K system. I'm curious, is a big measure of the success of universal pre-K going to be in 3 years, there either will or won't be a major spike in reading at grade level at the end of second grade?
I think it'll be one measure. Certainly the other measure is kids' self-confidence, the kids' ability to sit and focus in school. I mean, what I'm finding as I visit pre-Ks around the system, there are kids already engaged in active talk. Their attendance, I mean, one of the things we've asked the pre-K teachers to be very clear on, that pre-K is not optional. If you're registered, you have to come to school every day, because one of the things we're finding in older grades, and I'm sure Nick can verify this, is student attendance. If you're not in school, you're not learning. So we need to get the habit of going to school every day, starting pre-K. And also pre-K comes with a very strong focus on parent engagement. Everywhere I'm going, parents are signing up to work in the pre-K classrooms. Today there's one mother who does nothing but cooking classes. She rotates from class to class doing cooking with these little four-year-olds. So I think this is a place to start good school habits, not just early reading, but certainly, you know, reading readiness is a crucial part of what we're doing.
New York City Schools Chancellor Carmen Farina, thanks a lot for coming on. Good luck with all this today.
And Nick, good luck to you. Expect to visit you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we still have a few minutes with Nick Lawrence, who teaches 8th grade social studies at the East Bronx Academy for the Future, as we're comparing notes on the parents' role and the teachers' role in these parent-teachers conferences and how they can be most productive for the kids. 212-433-WNYC. And Ray in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ray.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yes, my wife is a teacher at elementary school, and her biggest problem with the new contract is that they've taken this time out for the professional development and the parents' day, and so now her day is 30 minutes shorter, and she wants the class time with her kids. She's already there at an hour early every day, and she stays late every day, and she's emailing parents constantly. She's not had any problem talking with the parents. The problem is she has 33 kids in her class, and she needs every minute of the day teaching.
So school is actually getting dismissed earlier on Tuesdays than
no,
the other days of the week?
No, every day. They've lost 30 minutes a day every day of the week because of the new contract with the combination of professional development and the Tuesday parent thing.
Nick Lawrence, I know you're here as a teacher, not as a spokesperson for the system, but are you facing that same schedule change at the East Bronx Academy for the Future?
So I think the difference for us was the use of the 37.5 minutes. We also are what's been classified as a pros school, and we've had some flexibility with our scheduling. So we've been able to incorporate professional development into the school day instead of having that block after school and a few other things. So a big change I've seen this year is instead of having a block in the morning with our 8th graders, for instance, in advisory, we are doing it once a week during lunch. That's not core academic time. We have the same number, I believe we have the same number of instructional minutes per week, but that 37.5, which is within the contract, and most people use it in a 10-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio setting to do like remediation. In a class that has 33 kids in elementary school, for instance, that's gigantic. And that is really probably very important time. And I thought that our advisories were really valuable. So it is a bit of a loss that we only have it one day a week now at lunch, as opposed to, you know, half an hour every morning.
So, Nick, as a teacher, do you have insight from past years of parent-teacher conferences to draw from to give advice to parents as to how they can get the most out of them?
Yeah, I think so. Something that the chancellor was talking about in terms of this parent conference was, this is a different one than the one that's going to come up later in the semester, the one that's going to be in early spring, and the one at the end of the year. This is about setting expectations. So I think asking those questions that she sort of brought up, what can I do to support my child at home? What sort of things should I put in place? What structures should I put in place? Not just helping them with their homework, but what sort of things can I offer? Another thing is, what ways are the teachers able to support me in that work? So for me, this is going to be a really important conference because I want to meet all of the students in my advisory who I'll be in charge of in terms of homeschool communication. And I want to know a little bit more about their home lives and see what kind of structures they have in place, what time they're working, what's available. And I think that having the parents ask the teachers, like, what is that relationship going to look like? You know, this, I see this as an opportunity to build community and build relationships over the course of the year, not waiting until November to then just have a chat about grades. So I think that parents should ask that question if they're not being asked that question. Have a real conversation. Say, what is this relationship going to be like? Because it's a relationship between the parents and the teachers and the students.
Charles in Howell Township. You're on WNYC. Hi, Charles.
Hi. I have to tell you, I'm a retired educator, and when I first started teaching 45 years ago, I unilaterally did what they're trying to do now, and it was actually discouraged by the school and the union. But during the first week, I invited all of the parents to come in the evening on my own time. I sat down with them, and I gave them the curriculum. I showed them what the kids would be doing, the homework schedules, basically blocked out the entire program for them. I gave them my phone number and said, you call, come in anytime you want to, because it's communication that will make a difference. I could honestly spend 2 hours with the details of this. To this day, and I've been retired now for 17, I still get notes from students saying that I was an exceptional teacher to them and their parents because of the communications. One of the other things I used to do, and it made a huge difference, because when I was first teaching, many of these were kids who were considered not functioning on the proper levels. You know, they were the problem kids. One of the other things I used to do is send letters home to the parents telling them what good things the kids did. And this produced an incredible communications link, where normally the only time they heard from the school was when a child did something wrong.
Charles, thank you. Lessons to be learned, I think, there for many teachers, no doubt. Liz in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I'm a parent of a seventh grader in a New York City public middle school, and my question has to do with the length of the parent-teacher conferences that we'll have later in the year. It was a startling transition from elementary school, where the conferences felt very short with one teacher, to then have four teachers, and I met with three of them for 2 minutes apiece, and then the humanities teacher, because it's a doubled subject, we had 8 minutes. So I guess I'm wondering if it's going to be the same small amount of time three times a year, and how can we, as parents, maximize that tiny bit of time when so much of it is the teachers just telling us very, very quickly what's happening.
And that probably depends on the size of the school. I know my own son, who, the last few years has been in very big New York City middle and high school. We had 5 minutes. Is this what you go through, Nick? We had literally, and there would be a student monitor outside, you know, knocking on the door if we went past 5 minutes, because that's all you had with the teacher, because the teacher had so many parents to get through by the end of the night or the end of the afternoon. So, Nick, is there advice? I don't know if your school is as big, you know, as my kids' schools, but or I guess Liz's kids' schools. But do you go through that, and do you have any advice for parents or teachers as to how to maximize the time if you have literally 3 to 5 minutes?
Yeah, sure. So our school approaches conferences slightly differently, and there are a lot of schools that approach conferences in the way that we do, in that we try to create what are called student-centered conferences, and that means that we have a strong advisory system, and we have for many of our grades, we have the parent sit down with the advisor for a 15 to 20 minute block of time, go like thoroughly through their progress report, talk about progress. Our eighth grade team meets prior to that time and to talk sort of through big issues with students. And then after that time of 20 minutes, the parents are free to, in the last chunk of time in parent conferences, to pop around at individual teachers for that shorter amount of time to resolve more specific issues. I know that that 5 to 8 minute block is really stressful and that it's really difficult to get good feedback and have a good conversation in that time. Something that if you don't have a system set up where it's meant to have a longer conversation, going in with a progress report that's broken down as much as possible and the report card, having potentially called teachers or talked to them prior to conferences to kind of know what's coming up. I think of it as like preparing for a meeting between colleagues or people in my community where I want to be as productive as possible. Come in as prepared as possible, have your questions ready to go, have as much information that you can possibly get on your student, and, make the best of 5 to 8 minutes. I know it's really tough.
Yeah,
to
and Liz, you know what else I've done in the past, and most teachers are going to be receptive to it, is if you need to talk to them in a little more depth about something, you make a separate appointment that's outside of parent-teacher conference night. And, there's hardly a teacher who won't meet with you for a longer period.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Nick Lawrence from the East Bronx Academy for the Future, thank you very much for giving us some time today. Good luck with your parent-teacher conferences and presentations, which I know are coming up tomorrow. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next here, worn stories. What pieces of clothing do you keep because of the story that goes with it from your life? There's a new book to that effect with a lot of interesting contributors with their stories. We'll hear from one, Piper Kerman, the author of Orange is the New Black, and tell you about many others and take your calls with your stories of that one piece of clothing that's associated with a story in your life that makes you keep and keep and keep that old shirt or sweater or pair of sneakers or whatever it is. You can call us with those stories, 212-433-WNYC.